Hello, good morning. Sorry, I'm running a few minutes late, but I appreciate all of you gathering. Many of you are here well before me. Thank you so much for gathering here for today's live cast. Actually, I realized I forgot to close this window. Let me close this window real quick. That's better. Having that light back there can be a little bright if you're watching me. Thank you all for gathering today. I'm Jamie. I'm from Stonemaier Games, and I'm here as usual to answer your questions, to discuss some random topics, and a lot of games I've been playing lately. That'll be the main topic of today's conversation, and a few other little things. One kind of little, kind of big thing that I wanted to mention that just went live today is that we decided to do just a fun little thing, an experiment, and do a March Madness-style bracket of Rolling Realms promos. So Mark, who's very active in the Rolling Realms group and has created a number of fan realms, put together a bracket of 32 realms that Stonemaier Games has published. So promo realms for Rolling Realms that we've published. And if you go to the Rolling Realms Facebook group, you can see this bracket. And essentially, I think the way that it works is that you can fill out a bracket choosing between the different matchups, March Madness style. You'll choose your favorite of two realms, and you can choose based on how you like that realm or how you like the game that inspired that realm, as is the case in Rolling Realms. And I think the way it'll work, so you'll select the whole bracket that way. I've done that too, just to see how it works. I think the way it'll work after that is it counts all those selections also as votes. And so if I voted for the role player realm, if I selected the role player realm, that also counts as a vote. And so eventually, not only are you making predictions, but you're also essentially making votes. The two are one and the same, I think. We haven't done this before. Anyway, if you like the style of bracket, it takes like 2 minutes to fill out, especially if you're just clicking based on realms that you like or games that you like. Check it out. It's in the Rolling Realms group. We're doing that today. I also have a Rolling Realms live play today at 3 o'clock Central Time. So in about 5 hours from now, I'll be doing a live play. Today I'm doing, what am I doing? Millennium Blades, Scythe, and Scoventeer are the three realms I'm running today. Anyway, that's Rolling Realms news. That's the stuff that's happening right now. What have you all been playing? I see a few questions asking about that. I had the pleasure of going to a place called the Gamers Ranch in the middle of Missouri this past weekend for a nice long weekend and had a wonderful time with a big group of friends, essentially just playing games for the whole weekend. This place this is the third time I've been here. And it's essentially a vacation property built around all sorts of gaming. Lots of tabletop games, lots of card games like Magic. There's a ton of Magic Commander decks, a ton of board games, like thousands of board games. There's also pinball machines. There's all sorts of video game consoles. Those weren't really used, actually, this time. There's also a legitimately well-designed 18-hole disc golf course around the property. There's a lake there. It was a little cold to get in the lake, although a few of my friends got in the lake anyway. It's an amazing property, and we went there and had a ton of fun. And today I'm going to talk about some of the games that I played there, because I played 15 games that were new to me, and then another 10 games on top of that. So a total of around 25 gaming sessions over the course of the weekend. Let's see. Ian says, any chance new promo realms will be revealed during the live plays, or are we waiting for April's newsletter? Ian, I actually haven't said when I'm going to reveal new promo realms. That isn't part of today's announcement. Today we have the March Madness bracket, and we have the Rolling Realms live play today. Let's see. I guess Ian, in a way, you're maybe asking how long should I hold off before making another Stonemaier Games purchase? And I think I guess the answer is you hold off until I announce the realms. So whenever that is, I will always announce them a few weeks in advance of when they'll be on the web store. So I think that's the best I can do. I generally don't announce things until I announce them. So Garrett says, the Gamers Ranch is seriously a bucket list item. Hopefully him and Allie have the opportunity to go some year. It's incredible. It's an amazing property. We almost ran out of beds this year. I overbooked us slightly, but a few people were fine with sleeping on couches. It sleeps like there are four rooms that are private rooms with big beds, like king size beds. And then there are a bunch of other rooms that have two queen beds in them. So either individuals or couples could sleep on those two beds. So it's a little bit flexible if you have couples. You can put more people in there. But we had We only had three couples this year and a lot of singles, so we had to spread out a little bit. But we had a wonderful time. Some of the games that I played. So yesterday, I'm spreading out the videos that I'm going to record about these games, but I recorded six of the videos yesterday. And the games that I recorded, what were those? I recorded videos for Lem, which is a push-your-luck game about cats in space. Moon, which is a drafting game. Splendor Duel, which is a two-player version of Splendor. Dune Imperium Uprising. Bacon. Dune Imperium Uprising. Yeah, I've been really excited to play that. I don't mean to just skirt past that. I'm really excited to play it. I love the new version of Dune. Bacon, which is a shedding game, a card shedding game. And Great Western Trail New Zealand. Those are the videos that I recorded yesterday. And while I wouldn't necessarily say that those are my favorite games that I played over the course of the weekend, I did gravitate towards the games that had, for my first set of videos, that had mechanisms that really excited me. So all six of those games, I really enjoyed all or part of them in some way. I'll come back to the other games that I have to record. I see some questions here. Justin says, any games you have on the shelf that you don't anticipate playing for a long time, but you keep just because you like owning it? That's a good question, Justin. Yeah, it kind of ties to a question I asked recently about what is your favorite game that you haven't played in a long time? So a game that you think of as a favorite game, but you haven't actually played for a long time. So it's a video I'm actually working on. What is the nature? I'm looking at my shelf over here. So I have my shelf of games. Okay, so one that I haven't played in a long time that I do really enjoy is Glenmore 2. And when I film the video, I think I'm going to dig into a little bit of why there. I'm going to try to figure out why this is a game that I know I love, and yet I rarely actually pull it off the shelf and get it to the table. And part of the reason is I often just play new games. That's part of it. But I do love to revisit games that I already know. I love those times where I don't have to learn a new game. I can just play a game that I love. So I need to dig into why I love Glenmore 2. But I don't actually play it all that often. So yeah, that's an example here. Let's see, kind of a nice comment here from Cactus Jactor says, would like to thank you for taking the time to answer and give advice in the YouTube comments. It's hugely appreciated. My pleasure. Yeah, I take any of my advice with a grain of salt, but I'm always happy to offer my perspective in case it's useful to you. So I appreciate you saying that. Garrett says, did Uprising surprise you? I was really impressed with both how familiar and how different it felt in all the right ways. I think I prefer it over the original. It did surprise me for both the reason that you mentioned, that it felt very familiar, but there are lots of like very small adjustments to actions. I think they really dug into which actions are players actually using and which actions are players not using all that often, which is difficult to do, especially when you're very close to a game. I thought they did a great job of that. It also surprised me. Like there are some new elements that I did not engage with at all. And that's maybe just my strategy for this particular game. I chose some things to engage with, other things to not. So I did not engage with the contracts. I did not engage with the sandworms. I think I got defeated by some sandworms, but I did not use them at all. I like that they were in there. I think they added to the theme. I think they're interesting mechanisms. But it felt almost more sandboxy, where you can choose a few things that you want to do and a few things that you want to ignore. I focused more on the spies, which I really liked. And what was the other thing that I talked about in my video? The spies were the main standout feature to me. Also, the new asymmetric abilities. I thought those were fun to play around with. I had one of the new characters from Dune 2. He was my character. What was the other thing? There was some other element of the game that I thought was thought was really clever, but I'm forgetting it now. But the spies were the main standout. The thing was in the original Dune, there were there was one action that you could only use if you had at least two Fremen influence, but only one action like that. And so they added three other actions like that, one on a card, two others on the board, one corresponding for each of the different factions. I thought that was really clever. I think that was a neat mechanism, and I'm glad they made it apply to each of the different factions. So yeah, it was a nice surprise. Valerie says that, I also had a gaming day on Saturday. Valerie says she was able to teach two games of Wormsman. Thank you so much for teaching, Valerie. I really appreciate that. She said the five-player game included her 10-year-old daughter, and everyone at the table enjoyed it. Also played Apiary, Boop, Werewords, and Diced Veggies. Sounds like a nice combination of games there. I'm seeing your answers. I won't post all the answers of what you're playing, but wanted to highlight that because Valerie was so kind to teach Wormspan. Cactus Jactor says, are you a horizontal or vertical game store? I spent a few hours changing my shelves to horizontal last night, and I'm now totally sold and love how it works. I am a vertical game store purely because I think it's easier to take the games off the shelf. Whereas if you stack them vertically, unless you have a special shelf designed for that, if you want to get to the bottom game, you have to remove the top games. And I even found, it's interesting to me how like the littlest things can make a game more difficult to get off the shelf. So I was at this Gamers Ranch over the weekend. They had their games, at least on the new shelf, stored horizontally. And there were games that didn't get pulled off the shelf simply, I think, because they were on the bottom of the stack. They were stored vertically. There were three other games on top of them. Even though it's a super easy thing to do, it just, you know, it's one more barrier in the way between you and that game when there's a bunch of other games that aren't stacked under games like that. There were also games I noticed where you could not tell the name of the game from the side of the box. Not all the sides of the box had the name of the game on it. And so that also was a challenge. Like how do you know what game it is? Are you going to take the time to turn it and rotate it to find out which one? Or you just leave it and look at the other games that have the names on the sides of the box. I'll try to post a photo on Instagram of what this shelf looked like. We used a fun system this year that I thought of. I'll take credit for this because I thought it was pretty clever and it worked out well, where I brought a few pads of sticky notes to this Gamers Ranch. So this is a vacation property with a ton of board games and around 20 different people, 20, I think at times there were like 24 people there. And so when I got there, I walked around and looked at all the games that I was really excited to play. And I wrote down my name on a sticky sheet, a little sticky note, and I put it on that game. And I left the sticky notes out and the pads of paper out and pens and whatnot. And anyone who saw a sticky note that was already on a game for a game that they wanted to play, they could just add their name to the game. And that way, later on in the weekend, sometime in the weekend, when someone is ready to learn or play that game, they know who else is interested in playing that game with them. And it works really well. I don't know. I would almost do this maybe at an all-day game day too, where just, you know, it's just a signal to everyone that, hey, I'm interested in this game. And it really stands out on the shelf. When you have these sticky notes, it really stands out to show which games are games that people are excited to play at that game day or game weekend. Jeff says, any games that you got rid of and they went out and rebought it because you miss it? Yeah, this is a good question for everyone. Have you ever gotten rid of a game, whether you gave it to someone, you sold it, you didn't play it for a while, and then you missed it so much that you went out and bought it? I don't know if I have any games like that. I can't think of any, because most of the types of games that I've given away I don't want to mention any specifically, because I definitely don't want anyone to send me these games. I have enough games. But many of the games that fit into this category are games that maybe I bring to a family reunion and I see someone really enjoying a game. So they're usually lighter, shorter games. And I see someone really enjoying that game and I just give it to them at the family reunion or the event, whatever it is. If I see someone really having fun with a game, I'm happy to give it to them. And oftentimes they're the types of games that, I guess what I'm getting at is that they are in circulation among my gaming friends. So I think Codenames was one of those games. I have never regretted getting rid of Codenames because I have access to it through other people whenever I want to play Codenames, that sort of thing. Greg says, do you find that the sheer volume of new games available to play crowds out the ability to get some of your favorite titles to the table? Sometimes, yes. Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's not just about the sheer volume, but it's also because I have a YouTube channel where I talk about games. And twice a week, I have given myself the obligation to post videos about two new to me games. I do like to play new games. I like to explore them. I like them for the YouTube channel and I like to learn from them. But you're right, this does sometimes mean, even often means, that there are games that I love on the shelf that I wish I could play a little bit more often. Yeah, that definitely happens. And for that reason, I haven't done it yet, but one of my goals for this year was to every now and then film a video about a game that I've already filmed a video about and look at it through more experienced eyes, because a lot of times when I film these videos, it's after one play, it's after the first play. They're not reviews, and so I feel comfortable doing that. I'm looking just for my favorite mechanism in the game. But if I've gone deep into a game, then I might have some deeper thoughts to share than after that initial play. Ian says, what's my favorite Wormspan dragon? Ian loves the Blue Forest spirit art and lore, the combination of the art and the lore. There's a, I don't know. I have a lot of dragons that I really, really love the art for. There's one dragon. It's a koi dragon. I can't remember the full name, but koi dragon is in the name. And I just love how it looks like a koi fish with the scales, the coloration. It's, I think, a kind of a serpentine dragon without wings. I love that illustration. I don't know the lore for it. I should know the lore for it. Let's see. Joshua says, I'm just focusing on our questions right now, but I appreciate the comments too, and I am reading them. Joshua says, how many players did you have for your Clank Legacy playthrough? We had all four. We had a full player count of four. I think it may have been fun with two, but it was fun to play it with the full four. Joshua says, I've had it on my shelf unplayed and might convince his fiance to play two-player rather than wait for an available four. I have heard, I definitely have two friends who are a couple who played it just themselves and they had a blast with it. So I think you are going, I think there's a good chance you'll have a good experience playing it with just two players if you play it that way. Yeah. That is honestly how I play most campaign games now. It's just me and Megan playing those campaign games. I'll answer Aaron's question, then I'll briefly mention the other games that I played at the Gamers Ranch this past weekend. Aaron says, do you think about games being stored vertically when you design inserts? Sometimes I do. When I remember to do that, I do. Ideally, when we design an insert, the lid is good enough that the components don't slide around. And I think the wake-up call for me for this was the Red Rising Collector's Edition, when the lid was not tight enough on each compartment that if you turn it vertically, the components go everywhere, particularly the metal cubes. So that was a wake-up call that I needed to pay attention to that, and I try to pay attention to that ever since. Yeah. So real quick, the games that I already mentioned that I played this weekend that I've done videos for, I haven't posted the videos yet, but those games are Great Western Trail New Zealand, Bacon, Dune Imperium Uprising, Moon, Splendor Duel, and Mlem. The other new-to-me games that I played this past weekend were Surfosaurus Max, a really neat it's competitive game, a semi-cooperative poker game. You're forming a poker hand together. A real-time game called Fit to Print. Strike, which is, I think, a classic dexterity dice rolling game. Sorry Slider. So one late night at the Gamers Ranch, we wanted some really light dexterity games. So we played Strike and Sorry Sliders and had fun with both of them. I played most of a game of my father's work. We had to struggle through it a little bit because we were learning on the fly, not the game's fault. We played Three Ring Circus, played Robot Quest Arena, Pueblo. I should say what these are about. My Father's Work is a game about it's a worker placement game about creating Frankenstein-style monsters. Three Ring Circus is about running a circus. It's a Euro game about running a circus. Robot Quest Arena is a deck-building game with tactical combat against other players. Pueblo is a game about block placement and perspective alignment. And then Seas of Strife, which is a trick-taking game with a neat little twist to it. Those are the new-to-me games I played this past weekend. The other games that I played that weren't new to me were Star Wars Unlimited. I missed out on a draft, but I did teach someone how to play and had fun playing with them. We played a couple rounds of disc golf at the Gamers Ranch. Played the best game of Blob Party I've ever played. I love Blob Party already, but we played a giant version. So Blob Party is a cooperative social game where you were trying to write down the same thing as everyone else. And as you start to do that, as I write down the same thing as Megan writes down, we form a blob and we just present one answer to the group from then on until everyone blobs together. We played it without the Play-Doh that comes with the game because we had like 16 people. We just kind of stood up around the room and blobbed together in little groups as we played. And it was incredible. It was really, really cool. And I think we had to use some components from Just One to make that happen too. We played a Scout. Played a good game of Scout. Played a great game of QE. I was very mischievous in this game of QE. We played, I taught and played Let's Go to Japan for a second time. Really enjoying that game so far. Played Lacuna, a nice little spatial two-player game. I taught and played Earth. Had a great time building a beautiful island in Earth. Played Twinkle Starship, a really clever trick-taking game where you can change the numbers because they look like digital clock numbers. There's these little things you can put on the numbers to change them. And played a really big group game of Cartographers, which was, I found it was like later one night, but not so late that we were tired that we wanted to just play kind of silly games. But it was late enough that we didn't want a heavy game and we wanted a lot of people to participate. So Cartographers was a great fit for that. Anyway, those are all the games that I played at Gamers Ranch this past weekend. Let me know if you've played any of those games. Curtis says, for a well-selling game like Viticulture, is there a reason you have not printed a rubber playmat for it? Yeah, the reason for Viticulture specifically is that I don't think it needs a rubber playmat. In fact, I think it would be a worse experience with a rubber playmat. Rubber playmats, I think, are great when you are picking up cards from the playing surface. And in Viticulture, you aren't doing that. You aren't picking up cards that are individual cards that are laying flat on the board. You're never doing that. And on your tableau, you're picking up, I guess you kind of do have field cards on there, but they're designed to extend a little bit off the mat. So you're never picking them up without a finger hold on them. So that's the reason for that. Let's see. Jordan has a nice comment. I'm a great game designer. Thank you, Jordan, for saying that. Have you ever thought of leaving the day-to-day Stonemaier game stuff to someone else if that person pops up and going full designer mode? No, I haven't. I mean, game design is a very small part of my job, maybe 5 to 10% of my job. Most of my job is project management, marketing, and game development, whether they're my games or games designed by somebody else. Game development in comparison to game design. Game development is taking a game that already exists and making it as fun and balanced and as intuitive as possible. And I have imposter syndrome for all of these things. I don't know if I'm a good game designer. I don't know if I'm a good developer or a good project manager, good marketer, any of that stuff. But I enjoy the variety. I enjoy the variety. And I think if I was only doing one of those things, I'd get burned out really fast. So I really, really enjoy the variety of those different things. Nathan says, after watching your top games video, I've been wondering if we will see more weeknight games from Stonemaier, games that are easier to table with less time commitments. Weeknight games, that's interesting. Well, that's a good question, Nathan. Our focus are event games, so games that are the main focus of a game night. Doesn't necessarily mean they're a long game, though. We have a couple games that play in around 45 minutes. I would consider that a weeknight game. Might be a little bit of a stretch, but it could be a little bit of a weeknight game. I would say our playing times are going down a little bit from, you know, 2 hour games, trying to make these, although Wormspan jumps right back up to 2 hours. But our next game will be definitely shorter than that. So it's a good question, Nathan. I can't see us publishing games that go much under 45 minutes. Between Two Cities can do that. Definitely can do that. Smitten can be played in 5 minutes. So there might be a few of them sprinkled in there, but it won't be our main focus. I'm seeing some comments about games that people got rid of and then came back to. A question of the day for me to ask all of you to think about, question that I posed to ambassadors recently is, I'll pose it a different way. What is the last expansion that you heard about that made you really, really excited to the point that you bought it, or whenever you had the opportunity to buy it, you bought it. So think of the last expansion that really excited you and that you actually went ahead and got it or bought it or planned to buy it. Something I've been thinking about recently with expansions in general, where I personally, as a gamer, I have found myself getting less excited about expansions, and it doesn't entirely make sense to me. I don't know why. I'm processing it because I am more inclined, I think, to enhance a game that I already know that I love. I've already broken down that door. I already know that I love Earth as an example. I love Earth. I already know that I love it. I don't need to be convinced that I love it. I already know how to play it. It's very easy for me to teach and play and get it to the table. And yet, and like part of me is definitely excited about the Earth expansion, but also, and it's nothing about the expansion itself, but also I'm so satisfied with what I'm already getting from Earth that as a game that I already know that I love, that I feel less inclined to get an expansion for it. So I don't know. I'm processing that right now. Why I think I'm less excited about expansions, even though I think logically I should be more excited about expansions, particularly for games that I already know that I love. I'm curious what you think about that. What are you currently thinking about expansions, and what was the last expansion you bought that you were really, really excited about? And I say this as someone who is releasing an expansion in the very near future. We have the Expeditions expansion coming out in just a few months. So we're not going back on that. We're definitely releasing the expansion. Also, from a publishing perspective, it's a lot easier to design an expansion than to design a whole new game from scratch. So, yeah. Let's see. So Garrett has another, I thought there was one other one, but Garrett definitely says that he really enjoyed the Clank Legacy experience at 2. So for, I can't remember who was asking about playing that, maybe Joshua. There's a endorsement right there. Here's Mark chiming in about the March Madness event. If you missed it at the very beginning of the video, we have a March Madness style 32-realm bracket for Rolling Realms. That's in the Rolling Realms Facebook group right now. You can go check it out there. It's also linked on our website as well. So this is a bracket where you can vote on your pick between two different realms based on that realm or based on the realm, the game that that realm is based on. And I think the way the realm, the bracket will work is that your predictions also count as votes. So you'll be able to see which realms were the top picks throughout the tournament and to see if your bracket was like the correct bracket or the best bracket of the mix. And if that's how it ends up working out, if there is like a winner, I will give them a $25 gift card to our web store. I don't exactly know if that's how it'll work, but I think that's how it'll work. And thank you, Mark, so much for setting that up. Ian reminded me, what is my chocolate of the day? And I have it right here in front of me. I just dug into this pack of Samoas. It's empty right now, but I actually do have around 10 of these left. Girl Scout cookies. So the Samoas from Girl Scouts, one of my favorites. Only bought a few boxes this year of Girl Scout cookies, but currently I'm enjoying these Samoas as my chocolate of the day today. What is your indulgence or chocolate of the day today, Ian? Let me know in the comments. And anyone can answer that question, of course. I love hearing your chocolates of the day. Julio said, what's your pet peeve while playing games? Like people bending cards, eating messy, or phones? I would say two things here are, definitely. If other than taking a photo of the game, I really don't want people to be on their phones while playing the game. It definitely impacts my experience when people do it. I like being in that magic circle of a game. And if someone is on their phone, it's telling me that they're not engaging with the game in the same level that I am, or at least that I'm trying, even if I'm not enjoying the game, I'm trying to engage with it. So that is definitely a pet peeve. And also people who don't plan ahead for their turns. I understand that people play games at different paces and people have different levels of analysis process when they're making decisions. But in most games, you can plan ahead for your turn. You can have an ideal thing that you're hoping to do on your turn, and you can have a backup thing if that thing is no longer available. And I get the games are social too. So I like if people are interacting and having a great time, I understand if they're not thinking about their turn. But when players are given the opportunity to do that and they don't plan ahead for their turn, that's definitely a little pet peeve for me. I play relatively fast. Like if you look at my times on Board Game Arena, they're fast. They're maybe not the fastest, but I don't take a lot of time to take my turns because I'm thinking about my next turn. And I'm also thinking about the experience of everyone at the table. And I don't want to diminish that experience by taking forever on my turn. Like anyone though, I make the mistake of not even realizing it's my turn sometimes. Always embarrassed when that happens, but it certainly happens to any of us when we play games. And I also have taken very long turns sometimes where I realize something won't work the way I thought it would. So definitely happens to me too. Chad says, is there a player in your game group that tends to always win? If so, do you tend to try harder to win when you play against them rather than experimenting with the game mechanisms? That's a good question. There are certainly some people in my Thursday night gaming group that are really, really good at heavy Euro games, medium weighted heavy Euro games. I wouldn't even just say one person, but there are a few people that are just really good at those games. So when I play against them, I almost go into it knowing that I'm probably not going to win. And so I almost give myself more permission to experiment and do some weird stuff in those games than to try to push for the victory. I'm always trying to do well in games, but for me, having a good time at the table is trying something new, whether it's within a game I already know or a new game, trying to facilitate fun around the table. And sometimes I also like to be a little sneaky. So yeah, it depends on the game when that happens. Oh, Susanna, I totally forgot to write this down, Susanna. Maybe I missed the photo. I did play one of the other games I played this weekend. I'm going to write it down. Was Bag of Chips. So this was a game that I played in the past. I had played thanks to Susanna. And I did get to play it this past weekend too. I had a great time with it. I really, really love Bag of Chips. Thank you, Susanna, for reminding me. Susanna says, her day of gaming at the Gamers Ranch was the best day of gaming I've had maybe ever. Oh, Susanna, I'm so happy to hear that, especially since Susanna drove quite a long ways, both ways that day to make it work. I'm so glad you were able to come out and play games, Susanna. I saw that you got to play Leaf, so I'm still excited to play Leaf with you sometime. Yeah, that makes me happy to hear. Hilda says, any movies you're excited for this month? We were invited to an early release media screening of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and really enjoyed it. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, I am excited about that one. I'm glad that maybe I'm even a little bit more excited now that you say that you enjoyed it. I am also excited about the Kung Fu Panda movie, which I think came out last weekend, maybe the weekend before. I don't know if I'll see it in the theaters, but maybe. I enjoyed Kung Fu Panda. I think Megan really enjoys Kung Fu Panda. Ghostbusters, what else is coming out this month? There's not a lot of time left in the month. I saw Dune earlier in the month. I think probably just Kung Fu Panda and Ghostbusters right now. Yeah. Jeff says, feelings about battle royale type games. He usually doesn't like player elimination, but some give dead players something to do. So I actually played a game like this past weekend that I thought did it really well. I played a Robot Quest Arena. So this is a game where you use deck building to decrease the life of other players' robots. And if you do, that player gets knocked out, or the robot gets knocked out, but the robot then comes back into the arena with more health, and it just it moves the timer of the game forward when they do that. I think that was a pretty clever approach to it. So there's no player elimination. There are stakes and reasons to eliminate other players. And actually, I mentioned specifically how they did it in this game because it's pretty clever. Each player has some health cubes, 4 red cubes, 1 blue cube. The red cubes are each worth 1 point. The blue cube is worth 2 points. The blue token, how about that? Blue token is worth 2 points. The blue token is the last token that you earn if you deal the last point of damage to a player. So that is worth more points. So there's a reason to go after a player. There's actually a reason to eliminate a robot when you have the chance. And then when the player will respawn, the robot will respawn when it gets back to their turn with full health again, 4 red cubes and 1 blue token. So they're back in it. They're competitive again right away, and no one can hurt them when it's not their turn anyway. So I think I thought that worked really, really well. So eliminating player elimination, but still having reasons to eliminate the players that are, or trying to eliminate players, robots that are in the arena as they're playing. I thought that worked well. Curtis says, thoughts on Dune 2? I really enjoyed it. I thought it was beautiful. I love the sandworm riding. I loved the black and white portion of the movie. I thought was really interesting to see that. And I thought it was actually had some interesting humor to it. I found myself laughing a little bit more than I expected in Dune 2. Really enjoyed it, especially on the big screen. Miles, my friend Miles, was also at Gamers Ranch. He said he had a great time. Our huge blob party will definitely be a lasting memory. There's some great photos from the blob party. The big game of Blob Party that we played at Gamers Ranch. I highly recommend it. If you ever have a huge group of people and you have Blob Party and you have any other game that has dry erase components, put them together and just play a big stand-up game of Blob Party. It is truly awesome. Do you think it's a good idea to make games about niche subjects, or is retheming and trying to appeal to as many people as possible the best approach? That's an interesting question. So in general, my answer is, find the right theme for the mechanisms, find the right mechanisms for the theme, whatever that may be. I think niche themes are great, especially if they invite people into the theme and if they provide some form of escapism. So I think those two things go together pretty well. Escapism slash imagination, triggering people's imagination or engaging people's imagination. I want more games about themes that aren't done a million times. And if a game is done about with a theme that's been done a million times, I want it to have pretty unique mechanisms that stand out from the pack for that game. But yeah, a niche theme is I think a great way. Like with Wingspan, not that birds are a niche theme, but it really hadn't been, there weren't medium weight Euro games. I don't think there was a medium weight Euro game with a bird or even a nature theme like that, other than farming games. There probably were. I'm sure you can think of examples, but Wingspan was, I think, at the forefront of that. And I think that is what made it stand out a little bit, that it was a bit of a niche theme. It was different. along with some wonderful mechanisms. But I think the theme that Elizabeth Hargrave chose was a major part of what made Wingspan successful. So yeah, I would jump into niche themes as long as they are inviting to other players and they can engage players' imaginations. I think that's a great approach. And one reason I'm saying it that way is that I remember at one point at a playtest night, a prototype night, a long time ago, someone brought a game to the table about, it was about what their job was. And I can't even remember at this point what it was, but it was an important job. I think it was like working at like a sewage treatment plant, that sort of thing. So definitely a niche theme, not something I think about all that often. I should probably think about the sewers more often, but I don't. And it wasn't what I wanted to escape to at the gaming table. And this player, they were essentially, I think they were really excited about their job and they were creating a simulation of it in game form, which I think is great. That's a great experiment to try if you're designing a game. I don't necessarily think that that is the most inviting theme to people though. Especially if you're trying to create a simulation of something about your job. I generally don't think people want to do a job unless it's a job very different than what they do. And that might be intriguing to them. And I don't know, I'm talking out of my, I'm not making a lot of sense here, but yeah, I think the how engaging and inviting and exciting the theme is matters even as a niche theme. Okay, I posed the question about a few minutes ago about the last expansion you bought that really excited you. Also, feel free to mention why. Like, why did you buy that expansion? Let me know about that in the comments too. Get Into Games says, just getting back to normal life after an awesome weekend at AirCon and loads of great games played. Are there any games that you really wish was a Stonemaier title? That's a fun question. I have done two videos, not necessarily about games that I wish were Stonemaier titles, but I think they would fit into the Stonemaier catalog. I think I have one. I definitely have one from a few years ago. I'm trying to think of another video like that. I can't remember if I know that I filmed it. I can't remember if I've posted it yet. Let's see if I have it coming out soon. Okay, yeah, I do have another video coming out soon. So I currently have it scheduled for about a month from now on April 21st. I have a video called Top 10 Non-Stonemaier Games That We May Have Published. So that it games that kind of fit our guidelines that I also really enjoy that we may have published. We didn't, but we may have if given the chance to do so. So you'll see that video. I don't want to answer that question in advance, but it's a great question. And I do have that topic coming out in about a month. Let's see. Seeing some people answer questions about the expansion. There's a Mythwind expansion. I see someone says expansions that increase the player count. Someone backed the Kickstarter for the Thunder Road Vendetta expansion. Rise of Fenris is mentioned here by Matthew. Thank you, Matthew, for mentioning that one. Garrett says, are there any games you didn't love but did after buying an expansion for it? Oh, that's a good question. Off the top of my head, I don't think so. The only one that maybe comes a little bit close to that, well, although it isn't really an accurate answer, is Dominion. I certainly enjoyed, years ago, I enjoyed Dominion when it originally came out. But also, when I got the Prestige expansion, I really liked Dominion after that. So that's an example of one that that really elevated the game for me. So maybe I need to process that a little bit. What made, I'm going to make a note about that. But I can't think of many other games like that. I didn't enjoy the base game until there was an expansion added in. Yeah, I'll make a note about that. This is a topic that I am actively thinking about for one of our games. Let's see. Joshua says, I've read that Flo recently was trying to invoke the Legend of Zelda without revealing spoilers. Were you curious about Flo because of your open world game drawing from Breath of the Wild? I was more curious about Flo because of the designer and because of the artist. I didn't end up backing it. I'll gladly play it someday. I didn't end up backing it. So no, I wouldn't say there was a curiosity there tied to the open world game. The open world game that I'm working on does something specific that is different than that I think most games think of when they think of open world exploration. I'll talk about that a little bit more in the future. It'll make sense, I think, when I talk about it. You know, I've heard this one a few times about the Outer Rim unfinished business expansion. I've heard a lot of people say that they really enjoy that expansion for Outer Rim. I've only played Outer Rim once. I don't think I played with the expansion. I enjoyed it as it was, but I have heard this from other people too. Angel mentions Root. So for an asymmetric game, adding more asymmetry, more different factions to play is, I can see that being very compelling for people. I'm just scrolling through a little bit here. I need to catch up on comments. Chris has an answer about the expansion, Cascadia's expansion, because students are excited to have the additional end of game goal card. So more stuff, which is often what I want from an expansion. I just want more stuff that I can shuffle in and play with. She says, I used to buy every expansion for every game I like because I'm a collector, but now I'm more selective. I found I wasn't playing the expansions as often, and I didn't like when the expansions couldn't be stored inside the base game box. I think that's becoming increasingly important. I've definitely heard that. I resonate with that, Chris, and I've heard that from a lot of people. Sam, who recently successfully funded his campaign for Everstone on Kickstarter. Congratulations, Sam. He says he got the expansions for Subterra, which add new game modes to a game we love and table about once a month. The other is the Pirates expansion for Ostia, made me interested in the game. And there's one of the perks of a publisher putting an expansion out there. It can renew interest in the game. And even so, oftentimes when people ask, are you going to support this game for a long time? I think what they are often referring to is, are you going to release expansions for this game? So there's, I think, a little bit of an obligation from a publisher to release expansions. And so that's why I'm trying to figure out what I want and what people want from expansions as we consider that strategy in the future. But I definitely resonate with what Krista is saying about having it fit in the box and blend seamlessly with the game in a way that makes it easy to teach. I'm going to add that to my list here. Pepe says, do you and the other folks at Stonemaier Games, I have 6 coworkers here, so there are a few other people here, and a lot of people who impact the company through freelance work and other contributions, ever get to hang out outside of work-related activities? We do. Yeah, definitely. So my coworkers, some of us are here in town. Some of us are not. Christine's in a different state. Joe's in a different state. Erica's in a different state. But Susanna, Dave, me, and Alan and Alex are all here in St. Louis. And so many of them attend my game night. I play disc golf with Dave. Sometimes I go climbing with Alex and Susanna. I love the people I work with on many different levels. Nate says, how much do you consider expandability of a game during the initial design development? Almost not at all. It's not that I'm trying to not expand a game, but it's that I try to put everything that I think is important to the game, everything that is fun and functional and intuitive, everything that I feel belongs in the game, I put it in the game. I don't hold anything back. I'm not really thinking about the future. The one exception to this I can think of is, actually two, both are Scythe related. One is in the original Scythe game. I thought, I want to make sure that we could add more factions to this game. And so we put places on the board for those factions. I didn't design those factions, but I wanted places for them. Something I discussed with Jakob too, in terms of the lore and world building. And for expeditions, similar to what Chris has said earlier, I figured in the future there was a distinct possibility that we might add a few more mechs to the game for expeditions. And so I wanted space for them in the insert, in the box, a place for them. And so there are two places in the insert for expeditions for those mechs. Nate says, can you think of a time where you wished you had made a base game easier to expand when making an expansion? Thinking through all of our games here, there is one that's like that, a game that was easier to expand when making an expansion. It's a good question. It's a great question. I can't think of one off the top of my head where I was like, oh, I wish I hadn't done this in the core game design or development, because it's impacting this other thing for the expansion. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I bet there is. It's a great question. I'll keep thinking about that. Sam follows up to say, if an expansion has more stuff that just gets shuffled into a game I love, or an expansion adds elements of replayability to new games, I'm very interested in acquiring them. Chad says he was incredibly sad to hear about the passing of Akira Toriyama, the creator of the Dragon Ball franchise. Dragon Ball Z was a huge part of his social life, his high school life. Do you ever get into those cartoons? I must admit that I've never watched Dragon Ball Z, so I know almost nothing about it. But the passing of anyone, especially someone whose creations touched a lot of people, is sad to hear for sure. Yeah. Let's see. I'm scrolling through a few other comments about expansions. Let's see. DD says, what would you do first if you won one of the current big lottery jackpots? There's some big lotteries, apparently. I don't play the lottery, but those are some big numbers right there. Mega Millions is 977 million. Powerball is 687 million. For him, for DD, he says, I would buy all the wishlist games I have on his Board Game Geek account. That's a fun answer. It's a fun question for anyone. You know, if you want $1 billion, more money than you could ever imagine having, what would you do first with it? I can't think of it. You know, it's a fun question for sure. I don't know if I would spend money on anything differently that I already do. And in general, I'm pretty bad at like celebrating important moments in life. It's I often just continue on. I just keep on going. And so hopefully I would take the time to say, okay, wow, this is a big moment in my life. I don't know what it means yet for my life, but let's go out to dinner or something like that. That's usually my default when I want to celebrate. Let's have a special meal with some friends. So hopefully I'd at least go out to a nice dinner or something like that. Steve said, what did I think of Great Western Trail, New Zealand? Steve said, it's his favorite one of the three, but that was just his opinion on it. Thank you for sharing your opinion, Steve. Of course, I had not played Great Western Trail in a long time. It's a game that I admire, but one that I don't often get to the table because of its complexity and length. And Great Western Trail was a very complex game, and it's a long game, but I really did enjoy it. It was a good reminder of how clever of a design it is, with the deck building, the tile placement, as you're going on these routes, the upgrading of the player mats. I love the aesthetic of the top of the map where you have these different islands that you're visiting. I loved all that. I think it's a really, really clever game. And I love Alexander Pfister exploring these mechanisms of one-way action selection tracks. It's one of my favorite mechanisms in games. He does it in Maracaibo. He does it in all the Great Western Trail games. And also, I love the sheep. The sheep are adorable. They're so cute. And you can add other things to your deck. You can add a bird to your deck, a cuckoo, I believe. You can add a dog to your deck. So I like that you can add other things to your deck other than the primary animal in the game. So I had a great time playing it, for sure. Sean says, when will you be wrapping games in a Furoshiki? I got to see Let's Go to Japan last night. Such a fun game. I think that was a really clever touch for the deluxe versions of Let's Go to Japan. They wrapped the game in a cloth, essentially. The downside of doing that, and this is something to think about, as beautiful as it was, there was a human being that wrapped each of those games individually. So that was not a machine that did that. And I know that a lot of the things that we use come from human beings who do very minute specific tasks, probably at a very low wage. As a publisher, I try to keep that in mind when I ask Panda to make something. I try to keep in mind what not only I'm asking them, like, what is the labor for this? Can this be automated? This minute task, repetitive minute task, can this be automated? Or am I asking another human being to wrap this game in a cloth or to paint this little miniature? Is there a human doing that? That means something to me as a fellow human being. So I don't mean to rag on this Furoshiki. I think it was a very clever touch, a really beautiful touch. But I think that's something to be aware of when you look at a component like that. George says, any thoughts on the latest hype about the Star Wars Unlimited? I don't care about the hype about it, but the game I care about. I care about the quality of the game and how much I'm enjoying it, how much friends are enjoying it, how much people are enjoying it. And I have had a great time playing it so far. I've only played, I think, two games of it, maybe a third that I'm forgetting about. but I've enjoyed playing Star Wars Unlimited so far, and I look forward to playing more games of it in the future. I missed out on a draft. There was a draft of it at the Gamers Ranch this past weekend. I missed out on that because I was playing Great Western Trail New Zealand, but it looked like everyone had a great time. I was excited for them to have a great time, and I had gotten to play a game of it earlier in the weekend and had a great time doing that. Let's see. Scrolling down, looking for a few more comments and questions. Again, I'll say that there is a bracketed tournament style thing for Rolling Realms promos in the Rolling Realms Facebook group. If you like filling out brackets, it only takes like 2 minutes. It didn't take me long at all to fill mine out. That was created by Mark. Thank you, Mark, for creating that. And if you want to play Rolling Realms along with me, you can join me on Facebook in the Facebook group or on YouTube today at 3 o'clock Central Time. I'll be doing a live play of three of the realms and then another one tomorrow and Friday as well. Let's see. Chad says, when I teach Star Wars Rebellion to new players, I give them the Rebels faction because it's easier. That I also warn them that they will feel like they're losing the whole game. The game makes them feel that way when they are in fact not losing. It fits the Rebels themes really well. Do you have any games that when you teach, you have to warn the player about how they will feel during the game? That's a great question. I'm sure the answer is yes. Let me think if I can find a game that does that. We need to give players a heads up about that. You know, one thing, I can't think of a specific game for this, but one general thing I often mention to players, and one of the things I love about specific types of games is where I can say, let's just take a few turns. Let's start playing. I'm going to teach as I play. Let's just take a few turns. And the things that you do, even though they are important, will not have a huge impact on your ability to compete for the win condition at the end of the game. I like when games give you little things to do early on in the game that help you learn the game, but don't have the highest stakes. So that's often something I say to players, especially if I'm teaching a game where, hey, just try a few things. See how they work. Try a few things. It's okay. It will not, in this particular game, it will not hurt your chances of being competitive later on in the game when you know exactly what you're doing. I really like games that enable that. Opposed to games where the first decision you make in the game might be the most important one that you ever make in the game, and there's no going back from it. I think that can definitely be frustrating for players. I generally avoid games like that. Let's see. Jerry says, similar to watching a foreign movie, do you make it a habit of playing foreign games from other cultures and countries? Euro aside, obviously. It's a good question, Jerry. Do I go out of my way to play games by designers or publishers of specific, of diverse array of nationalities? I would say no, but I do try to play a diverse array of games from a variety of designers and publishers from around the world. So I haven't played a game from Japan in the last month, or I haven't played a game from a Canadian designer in the last month. It's more like I generally just try to play a wide variety of games from a wide variety of designers, publishers, and just in different genres. So I seek diversity in games, but I don't specifically target demographics of the people who created the games when I'm playing them. The Duke of Fall says, what do I think about expand-alone games? Yeah, that's a good question. So standalone expansions, I'm always a little bit hesitant to call them expansions. If they are also a standalone game, it's more like a standalone game that can combine with another game. We did this with Wingspan Asia. Wingspan Asia is a standalone game for two players. It is also an expansion, or it has components that you can combine with Wingspan. I like that. I like that method. The downside I found when we released it, in fact, I'm going to make a note about that because I thought that was generally a good strategy that I thought was going to make everybody happy. But what it also does is when we announced it, there were certainly some people who said, oh, I just wish I could have the bird cards from this. Like, I don't want the two-player mode. I don't play games two players. I don't want that mode. I don't want the solo components. I just want the cards. Or I just want the flock mode components. I want to play at higher player counts. I don't care about the other stuff. So the most common thing I got was, I just want the cards. I don't want to feel like I'm paying for these other modes that I'm not playing with, which was interesting to me. I hear that. It's a little bit tough as a publisher to cater to a la carte requests like that. like in any given game, there's probably going to be components that you don't use all that often if you play at specific player counts. But we can't offer a different player count version of every game. We ended up addressing this with Wingspan in particular, where we now sell the vision-friendly cards by themselves. So if someone just wants the cards, they can get the cards in that way. But in general, I like that strategy. I like what Wingspan Asia did, that it offered a standalone two-player game that was a little bit different. It offered a dueling version of the game. And yet, the cards all combined with Wingspan cards, and the Wingspan cards combined with the dueling cards. So if you can either sit down to play Wingspan in duet mode with all the stuff, or you can play Wingspan with other player counts, or even just two players without the duet mode with all the stuff. You don't have to separate stuff, which I think can be really frustrating if you have to constantly separate and recombine different components with expansions and core games. Yeah. Here's Jake, I believe, from Me Like Bees. He says he really wants to do a Gamer's Ranch as a band retreat. Would be super cool. Yeah, that would be awesome. I think you would love it there, Jake. And I don't think it's that far away from you. I'd highly recommend going there. Jake also says, what games were the most influential in your design philosophy, playing in conjunction with other players and then comparing victory conditions points as opposed to playing directly against others? Most influential is probably Terra Mystica is one of the most influential games to me. That's had a huge influence on me in many, many different ways. And then let's say playing in conjunction with other players and then comparing victory conditions points as opposed to playing directly against others. Not sure I completely understand that part of the question, but I do try to think look at games through various lenses when I'm digging really deep into them. And Terra Mystica is one of those games that I've definitely done that for. Cactus Tracker says, if I see crowdfunding campaigns that bring ancient or foreign culture games, it's almost an instant back for me. Oh, that's fun to think about. I did see that recently I'm forgetting the name of the game. There was a company that did this very recently that I'm forgetting about. And about expansions, it can be difficult when you have, so the comment here is, my only criticism of Wingspan is the near impossibility of shuffling all the cards. It does get difficult when you have a ton of cards to shuffle. Definitely relate to that. That is a challenge, I think, when you add more and more cards to a game. I definitely hear that. Well, thank you all for indulging me today in my conversation about Gamer's Ranch and all the different games that I played this past weekend. 25 different games played, 15 of them new. Great time at Gamer's Ranch here in Missouri. And join me today for the Rolling Realms live cast, for the Rolling Realms March Madness bracket that we're doing. And thank you for your comments about and answers about expansions. That's always interesting for me to hear your perspectives about that. Jerry says, I might be thinking Ludos. That might be it, but I think it was a different. It's a company that makes Reviving Kathmandu. Here, I can look it up on Board Game Geek right here before I go. Reviving. Yeah, here we go. The company is called Lemery Games. Lemery Games is the company I was thinking of. Anyway, thank you all. Have a great day. Thanks for your time today, and I will see you next Wednesday. Take care. Bye.